was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio broadcast on RBN Network. And we were just hearing an interview and testimony of a former Black Panther Party member, Tony Bryant, who is also the author of Hijack. He spent 12 years in a Cuban prison, and before he went to Cuba, he was pro-communism. He goes and gets to see a real dose of what communism is all about. He also exposes the connection with the quote-unquote racial supremacy, whether it be the white racial supremacy or black racial supremacy, and he exposes that as well. And he tells the horrors and the facts of what communism is really about. If you would, Mike, let's go ahead and continue letting our listeners hear. And I hope this is shared with individuals who support the Black Lives Matter movement. I hope this is shared with supporters of all of the ones that go along with all these different agendas to divide, because we've said this over and over again, it's a divide and conquer tactic, but it is to your own detriment. If you would, Mike, go ahead and play that.
Well, let's talk about your prison experience. What was that like?
That was horrendous. That was a nightmare. I could talk for hours about that situation. The conditions were horrible. All the guards carried machetes or bayonets. And the first assassination that I saw was approximately 2 months after I had arrived there. One prisoner we just returned from lunch, and the prisoner ran up to one of the cell windows to get a little bit of tobacco to make a roll of cigarette. And the guard ran up and began beating him with a machete. And the prisoner whirled around and tried to grab the machete so that the guard couldn't hit him anymore. So the guard just stepped back to reach under his shirt, pulled out a gun, and shot him twice. And it was approximately 10 feet in front of me. And that really, it shocked me because I had never witnessed anything that brutal. Even though my past had been very brutal, but I had never witnessed the authorities or those in a position of authority being so outwardly brutal. And that was really nothing. I came to find out later that was really nothing. Later on, the experiences that I had were countless, but things that were fantastic. I witnessed executions, which I think I'm probably the only American that has witnessed executions in Cuba. This was a particularly chilling thing. Three prisoners attempted to escape, and in the attempt they killed three guards. And I'm of accord that they should have been punished and even pay with their life. It was the manner in which they were punished, you see, that really began to make me think and began to make me change some of my ideas. Because even up until that point, I have to point out that I still believed in the revolution. I still believed that that communism was the answer, that revolution was definitely the answer, especially for the black people. In this particular execution, since they had escaped from Principe, these three men, they brought them back, and they tried them right there in the prison, in a little smaller room right in front of the galley in which I lived. And there was a large patio right in front where I could stand and look right out of the barred window, right into the patio, approximately 5 feet away. And the first man, they captured him that same evening, that same morning, rather, about 1 o'clock that morning. About 5 o'clock, I saw the guards running around putting up loudspeakers and all that. And then the judges came, and then they locked all the prisoners down, naturally. And then they began filling the prison up with communists, and with military personnel from the streets until they had about 2,000 or 3,000 people there.
And these were all dignitaries, or were they public at large?
No, not public at large. In the sense, no, not this time. They were all either members of the military, of G2. Most of the time they did the whole public executions. This one was just military and dignitaries. And the first man, they tried about 7 or 8 o'clock that morning. They caught him at 1 and they tried him about 7. Then the transcourse of the trial, the people who were in the courtroom began shouting, "Firing squad, firing squad, firing squad." And about that time, a truck rolled into the patio, and I saw the guards begin to throw down sacks filled with sand. I still didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't even imagine that the man was going to be executed. And a friend of mine who was standing beside me collapsed. And I finally found out that at least a couple of people told me that they're going to execute this man right now. I couldn't conceive that, because it just didn't make sense. Out of all the judicial processes that I had faced here, at least I had had the right to an attorney, the right to appeal, and all that I'd ever heard of had been that even the most atrocious murders had the right to an appeal here in the United States. Well, they marched him out. Colonel Lamus, who was now a colonel, who was then at that time a lieutenant, who was head of all of the prisons in Cuba, marched him out. I can't erase this memory. It just comes back right now. I can see the guy walking across the patio and Lamus walking beside him. And I don't think that the young man knew that they were going to shoot him. But suddenly Lamus grabs him and pushes him against the bags. And then he knew, he understood what was going to happen. His hands were tied in front of him. And at that moment, the firing squad marched out from behind the same entrance that the truck had come in, through the same gates. And that was a horrifying sight. They marched to approximately 10 feet in front of the man. It was not an execution, it was an assassination, a way of satiating the lust that they had for blood. At any rate, Lamus called out the order, "Ready, aim." And then something happened. At that moment, a lady who was dressed, she was a military lady. She was dressed in green. She was about 8 months pregnant. And she screamed out at that exact moment, "Shoot him in the face." In other words, she didn't want to see him just killed. She wanted to see him mutilated. She wanted to see him completely destroyed. And fired. They shot him. His body was blown away from the sacks. And Lamus walked over to him, placed his gun behind the guy's head, gave him the coup de grace, then kicked him in the face and walked away. That was terrible. But then, with the audience applauding and screaming, the firing squad began dancing around the body, just like savages. They'd gone completely mad, it seemed. They were really content with what they had done, as though they had conquered an enemy, as though they had really completed some fantastic task. And when they tired of dancing, they took the body and threw it into the back of a truck, and it left. The next day, they captured the other two. It was a repeat performance, the same identical procedure, the same dancing around the bodies, the same spitting on the corpse, throwing it into a truck and taking it away. But it was at another prison, because I was sent to about 10 different prisons, 10 different work camps, concentration camps, where conditions were probably even worse because the treatment was extremely harsh. This one prison that I don't know how they sent me there, because it was an accident, I believe, just because perhaps I was black and I was with the Cuban population, and they just grabbed a bunch of records And I happened to have been among that group, and in the middle of the night, they put us on the cattle carts pulled by tractors. We traveled to a prison called Awika, which is in Matanzas. This was probably, it is one of the most feared concentration camps in Cuba. Upon our arrival there, about 4 o'clock in the morning, there were two lines of guards, approximately 60 guards, 30 on one side, 30 on the other, forming a gauntlet. And all these things were really new to me. They were really surprising to me because I'd never witnessed anything like this before. But as they called each prisoner, he had to jump off of the cattle cart and run between those two lines of guards. In fact, when he called your name, you began screaming, "Run, run, run, run!" And as you ran, the guards on both sides would beat you with machetes. That was just the opening. That was just your introduction into this prison.
See, when you say beat you with machetes, now I picture a machete as a giant knife.
That's exactly what it is.
They're beating you with a machete. They're That's cutting true. You badly.
They try to hit you with, well, they don't try. They utilize a nose, and at a moment like that, they will use the flat side. They'll hold it so that they hit you with the flat side. It's just enough to mark you. It's like my back is marked with machetes. But it's not to really disable you. It's to hurt you, but not disable you, because they want you to work, you see. But it's to let you know that you have come to a place where they will kill you. And they let you know that from the beginning by beating you into the place, letting you know. And that's for nothing, for doing nothing. All that is to instill terror, to make you very submissive, subservient, so that you will not even attempt to do anything except what they tell you to do. They tell you to jump, you jump. They tell you to run, you run. They tell you to work, you work. If not, you know that you have waiting for you beatings by those people. And it was, I think, at that point that I began to really question the revolution and question their motives. And I said, this was almost 3 years after my imprisonment, after having seen many abuses, after having seen assassinations, after having seen beatings and hunger and starvation, and yet I was so convinced that communism, that the revolution was necessary, that that didn't really bother me at all up to that point. But something snapped, and I just began to try to analyze a little bit more what was going on around me. The next situation, I think, that really made me began to open my eyes. This was in the same prison. We arrived at the camp about 6 o'clock that evening. I had a little skimpy dinner. It was rice and fish. And everyone just collapsed in bed. And about 1 o'clock that morning, they just kicked the doors open, the guards. And they came in with dogs on a leash. And attacking the prisoners, sticking the dogs on the prisoners, and just beating them. Just beat them out into the field and just had us stand there for about 2 or 3 hours. That's just terror tactics, terror. You see, Lenin said that the best revolutionary is a rehabilitated prisoner, which is to say that anyone that they send through that mill, they'll come out what they want you to be. You will come out of there obedient. You'll come out of there a true revolutionary, in their sense of a revolutionary, a true revolutionary. Whatever they tell you to do, you'll do it after you go through that. That's why prisons are so necessary in all communist countries. That's why they're so necessary in Cuba. That's why there, at one point, there were over 500,000 prisoners, and this was while I was there in Cuba, for the population of 10 million people, not even 10 million at that time, 9 million people, 500,000 were prisoners. I myself, I probably weighed about 120, 115 pounds during that time, because there was no food, very little food. And finally, I just began fighting back. I began fighting with the guards, and they would beat me.
It's a wonder you weren't killed.
It's a wonder, because they, well, my head has been fractured. All these are cuts and scars, just from being chained 24 hours a day. Scars here with machetes, that's also a brick that a guard hit me in the head with. This is another scar from a machete. Just, but the thing is, it wasn't, a lot of people might accuse me of being bitter because of what happened to me, and I don't feel that at all. I'm not bitter at all about what happened to me. In fact, I'm very glad that it happened to me. If I'm bitter at all, it's about the things that I saw happen to other people, how I saw them destroying the human being, the human aspiration, all the desires, completely suffocating of the individual, where he's not able to think, he's not able to speak, he's no longer able to create. They suffocate all of those ideas, all of those concepts. You can't write, you better not speak.
Well, are you talking about life in prison now, or
yes,
are you talking about life outside of prison?
Well, this was particularly life in prison, although I did have an opportunity to witness life outside the prison, because I escaped from a prison which they classified as escape-proof, and I was the first person to ever escape from this prison. And even at that point, I was in the maximum security section because I had escaped from another prison prior to that, and so they caught me, and they put me in this prison before I was able to get to the street.
Well, how did you get out? How did you escape?
This time, I escaped from there. A friend of mine gave me a little piece of hacksaw blade that he'd gotten into the prison somehow. I'll never know how. A friend and myself, we were locked in the cell 24 hours a day. It's on the second floor. And this was in a prison called Wanahai. And we took the little piece of hacksaw blade and we began cutting. It took us 17, 18 hours to cut through, make one slice and one bar, and about approximately the same amount of time for the other bar. And then we bent the bars. That was about 7 or 8 hours work right there. It was fantastic. Anyway, we went up on the roof. I pulled myself up on the roof, and there are lights all over. I'm supposed to be dead now. There's no one that's supposed to escape from this prison, because the way that the towers are situated, they can see any point in the prison. Anyone that's moving on any point, plus all over the roofs, because the roofs are painted white, and they have these giant lights going over the roofs so they can see anyone moving up there. There's barbed wire up there and glass, the whole thing. And yet, we managed to make it up there over the top of the roof. I could see guards on the other side, on other roofs with machine guns. And we had a little rope that we had made, my friend and I. We lowered ourselves, still inside the prison, right beside the wall, right in front of a guard tower, a giant guard tower. And we had to cross a space of approximately 8 feet where the guards patrolled between towers. And we decided, well, we're going to just die or escape. That was all. I was determined to either escape or die. Decided, well, we're going to just die or escape. That was all. I was determined to either escape or die. This place, it's bathed in light. It was just like daylight. And that's why I know, that's when I began to believe in God. I must stipulate that. Because it was this point, this particular escape, that I don't know to this day how that happened. We were lying, we'd come down to the rope, and we were lying on the beside the building. And just at the moment that we started to crawl, we just crawled out onto the path, and we heard footsteps coming. Two guards were coming from the opposite direction, walking directly towards us. And my friend told me, well, it's all over. We're captured. And they walked approximately 2 feet away from my head. I could have reached out and grabbed his leg, and they didn't even see us. It was just as though we'd become invisible.
This was in the darkness?
No, this was in plain, bright, just as bright as these lights are, because that place is bathed in light. You can't get out there without them seeing you. That's why I said, that's when I began to believe that God was doing something with my life. We crawled across. We're still inside the prison. To get out, there's still a white wall, about 8 foot high white wall, and then above that, a fence, a barbed wire fence with rolled barbed wire over the top. We still have to go over that. We still have to go about three blocks inside the prison, crawling along this wall, which is white with lights bathed against it so that any movement against it can be seen. The guards are in front and the wall is here, and we began to crawl. And we crawled all the way, we crawled about halfway, and the escape was discovered in the building. In fact, we were right alongside the guard shack when the sirens went off. And the guards came running out, and they started running towards the building. There was nothing for us to do except stand up and start running the other way. And we practically passed each other. We were running this way, and the guards were running that way. And we finally made it to the end of the wall. I helped him up. He got up to the top of the white wall, and he helped to pull me up, and we escaped. And that just, as they say now, blew my mind, really. So then, that was a beautiful morning when we made it out. We managed to get a cab. We didn't have any money. An old taxi cab. He took us to Havana.
Did he know you were escapees?
No, because we had taken our pants and turned them inside out, and our shirts, the stripe that they had, we ripped that off. And since most of the people in Cuba, they didn't have clothes at that time anyway, the same clothes that we had on were practically the same that they wore in the streets, blue jeans or something, Levi like that, and that's exactly what we had. So we weren't really that noticeable when we arrived in Havana. Luckily, upon arriving approximately 4 or 5 blocks from where this guy lived, he sees a lady that he knew when he was a little kid, because he'd been in prison then about 7 or 8 years. And he stopped the cab, jumped out, and she ran into her house and came back out with enough pesos to pay for the trip. This is all, I can just see the power of God working there, because if not, we'd have had to run, the police would have been called, and we'd have been captured much sooner than we were. But the cab driver was paid off, and we managed to just get away clean. And so this friend of mine took me over to his grandmother's house, where she lived, and I stayed the night there. I still hadn't really seen anything of the community, but the next day I did, because we had to leave. We couldn't stay there any longer. That night prior, we had sneaked in, because it was to be seen going into a house and remaining overnight was to have the police call. I didn't know that. But that morning we left. And as we're walking down the street, I noticed all these houses. On every block they had a house with a large sign hanging out in front that said CDR, Committee for the Defense of the Revolution. And I would see people standing out in front of the house watching everyone that walked by, are looking out of their windows and watching everyone that passed. And my friend told me, don't even slow down. Just walk as though we're on our way to work or we're rushing somewhere. Because these people know everyone in the block. They know that we don't live in this block. This is the strategy that's been set up to control, one of the strategies that's been set up to control the masses. On a square block in Cuba, there's one house on this side, another on this side, another on every side. There's at least one house that is a committee for the defense of the revolution. In other words, what we would call an informer. They inform on everyone in that block, anything that they do. If someone comes into, and this is 24 hours a day, if someone comes into the block and goes into a house, let's say, to visit someone, they mark that and they take notes. If that person doesn't come out within a few hours, they call the police just for visiting. You cannot go into a house in Cuba and stay as long as you want. Even if you're invited, you will be arrested. This is the control that's exercised over the people. Those committee members are the first that will be, there's no, they know that they will be killed if the revolution is overthrown. They're the ones who have really, they probably have no ideology other than the fact that they want a little bit more to eat. They like the power that they exercise over the people, the terror, the fear that people have for them. I felt that same fear that day because block after block after block, everyone was watching me. Aldous Huxley's prophetic vision is true. Big Brother is watching you every moment in those communist countries, every second. And it's a terrifying feeling when you know that you have no privacy, that your life does not belong to you anymore, that it belongs to the state, that any time they can take it. And that's from having that power that we have as a free country, as free individuals, the freedom to disappear if we feel like it. That no longer belongs to us when we allow communism to take over our country, or allow communism to come into our country and become the reigning factor, because it's necessary for them that they control you completely. The surveillance is absolute. That feeling, as I said before, it's something that's horrendous. You can't imagine being stripped block after block that you walk, stripped. Everyone watching you. There's people watching to make sure, to see if you go into a house. When you leave this block, then they forget you because they know you've been picked up on the next block, and they watch you. That was my first lesson in the socialist state on the streets. And I said, this is not what I want. And I asked, is this what you want? Is this what we want here in the United States? Is this what we want? Is this the socialist state that we're struggling to bring here? And I say we, I'm talking about the communists, the revolutionaries. Is this what we want? That we can't even walk down the street in peace? That we can't even visit a friend? But the control that they exercise in the streets, beside that control that we're talking about, that I was explaining then, is the control of the foods, the control of the material necessities of an individual, of the population. And it's no accident that that occurs in all communist countries, that there's always hunger, that there's always misery, that there's always a necessity. I think people should ask themselves, why is it that in all the communist countries there's always hunger? It seems a little strange. It seems that maybe out of all the communist countries, maybe one should have an adequate amount of food for its citizens and an adequate amount of clothing and enough heat to heat them during the winter. Why is it that they are always hungry? Why is it that they're always dependent, always saying that they depend on the capitalist countries, mainly the United States, to support them and keep them alive and feed them? And I say that they really have the capacity to support themselves, that there is plenty of food, that they do not give it. They do not give the food to the population because it's necessary that they keep the people hungry.
Okay, we'll pause right there, and we'll be right back after a word from our network sponsors.
You work hard like your parents both did. Everything you earn by breaking your backs. We're gonna redistribute when we make our big tax. Hey, sit back down, don't be a jerk.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and, of course, you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANA Republic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Balance of Nature's fruits and veggies. About 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. I went from being able to work 14, 16 hours a day with no problem to where I could barely walk a block to the store without having to stop and rest. I went on to the phytonutrients about 6 months ago, and within a couple of months, my medical doctor had cut my prescriptions down in a little bit smaller dosage. The next time I went back, a month later, I walked into the doctor's office, and he said, "My gosh, what's happened to you? You don't even look like the same person." He looked at my legs, and the swelling had gone down. My blood pressure was down. The venous stasis ulcers that I had had on my legs for the last 4 or 5 years because of the poor circulation were all healed, and I'm feeling far better.
Call now to find out how to get your free month's supply of Balance of Nature. Call 800-2468-751 or go online to balanceofnature.com.
Use promo code TSL.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Welcome back to Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio broadcast on RBN Network. And we have been listening to the testimony of a former Black Panther member, Tony Bryant. He's the author of Hijack. He did pass away in 1999, but he spent 12 years in a Cuban prison. And he came out and spoke what he learned. He used to be very much for communism. He exposes the horrors of communism. He exposes the way that they use, quote-unquote, race to divide us and to implement communism here within the United States of America. And after his visit in Cuba for 12 years in their Cuban prisons, as well as what he saw around in the communities when he had escaped, he exposes just how they keep complete and utter control of the people. I want this exposed because this mentality has been rampantly pushed, whether it be through mainstream media, or I should say lamestream media, because they're not mainstream anymore. But this is one of the causes, just one, not all, but just one of the causes that gets individuals to think that somebody owes them something under the pretense. The government feeds this. The mainstream media feeds this. All of this is fed. People start feeling entitled. They start screaming for this other stuff. And it destroys And only after it is implemented completely will you realize you don't want it. You think you do, yet the same individuals that think that they do want to be able to speak out, don't want the boot of the police on their neck. Do you think you're going to get that in a communist situation? No, you are not. Another word for that is socialist. So if we could, Mike, let's continue with the testimony of Tony Bryant and finish up with that. And then we'll open up the lines to some of our callers if we have any time left.
So first of all, they have no other idea, no other thought in mind except how to get that next bit of food. Keeps them unstable. They're not able to function. They don't even think about another ideology or another philosophy or what. They're not thinking about any of that. They're thinking about how to give food to that child. How can I get food? And also enables the socialist countries to take all that excess food that they do have, a tremendous amount, sell it to other countries, and buy weapons or trade it for weapons so they can suppress the masses even more. But it's necessary that they, that community, that people be kept hungry, in need, constantly, so that for, as a promise, as a, let's say, a booster, a morale booster, they can say, okay, well now, if you snitch, if you inform, we'll give you an extra pound of rice per month, or we'll allow you to buy a portable radio. And there's a very limited amount of things like that. And the people, for those little bits of life, they began to sell their souls. They become like that gentleman in the Bible who sold his birthright for a bowl of soup. Well, they do the same thing. Inevitably, finally, the Pavlovian effect is created that they will do anything to avoid that terror and to gain the recompense of a little bit of food, maybe an extra pair of pants, because they can only buy one pair of pants per year, maybe a dress per year, and that's all.
Well, how did you wind up back in prison? You were captured
after. I was captured after 3 days in freedom, and they sent me to another very tough prison, and about 7 days later I escaped from there. And so they didn't like that. They chained me 24 hours a day after that and placed me in a cell which was practically inescapable. There was no way to escape from it. Their walls were, it was solid cement. The walls were approximately this thick. There were two holes in the back of the cell, which was for the air, for my air and for the light. The door was just solid steel, a little slot that they could push the food through, and cement bed, cement slab to sleep on, and that's all. And I was there 1 year and 2 months in solitary confinement for those escapes, because they really didn't appreciate my escaping from this place that they had said was escape-proof.
How did you get out of prison?
Well, this was during the period that the Iranian hostages were, there was quite a problem here in the United States concerning the hostages in Iran. That was when they took over the embassy in Iran. And there was a lot of pressure on Mr. Carter. And since Carter, as far as I'm concerned, had done so many favors for Mr. Fidel Castro and been so nice to him, they'd got along so well that Castro really didn't want to see Carter out of office. He was terrified of Reagan gaining the presidency. And so to bolster his sagging image, Carter's sagging image, and since Carter couldn't get the Iranian hostages out in time for the elections, and this was all a factor now, political ploys, it was necessary then that they give something to Carter to make him look like he really was doing something. So Castro, as a favor to Carter, decides to release the 33 Americans that are in that were being held in Cuba. But I always believed that I would escape. I always believed that. And maybe it was because of that belief that God was doing something with my life that made me positive It made me very positive that they couldn't do anything with me. And I still believe that. I believe that I'm practically untouchable, not because of me, but because of the power of God that surrounds me, that protects me. I don't believe they can do anything. That's why I will preach, teach, speak anywhere, and I have no fear. I have no fear of them. And that's a very important fact, I think. Communism is doomed to failure because of people like myself who do not fear them, who do believe in God, and know that God is the power, that they are liars. They are the liars. They are the sons of Satan. God is alive. God lives. That's the thing that makes me positive and makes me very sure that they are doomed to failure.
Well, you're in the United States now, and you say you have no fear. You surely would know better than anyone how unpopular your message is in certain circles. So let's turn to the United States and take a look briefly at what you see here. Earlier you were talking about ways of identifying those who are working knowingly or unknowingly to bring about communism in America. How can you identify such a person?
Fine, I think that's a pertinent question. That's not too difficult to identify, though. At least for me it isn't, because of the fact that I recognize their slogans, their ploys, the propaganda that they constantly come up with. But for the person that's unaware of their tactics, they must first of all understand that anyone, any person, any organization that propagates superiority of racism, that white is no good, or that black is no good, or that white is the cause of all this, or that the niggers got to be killed. Anyone, that's one of the things, that's one of their basic tactics, is to divide. And the way that they divide, most of the time, I'm talking about communists, is through the problems of racial differences, of economic differences, class differences. If you want to classify this with a term, they like to use class differences. We don't need people like that. We don't need people to try to brainwash us and make us hate each other, you see. And that's exactly, those are the phrases that they'll use, that basically, as far as the racial issue goes, that white is no good, black is no good. This is to keep us divided. They should be avoided. Those are communists. Those are the ones that intend to divide us.
Would you apply this to the black and the white supremacist organizations?
Definitely.
What about organizations such as the Ku Klux Klan, the States' Rights Party, the neo-Nazis? And maybe this is unfair to lump them all together. I don't mean that. But these are groups which generally advocate rather strong, if not violent, solutions to the problem.
Yes, definitely. And I might include in that group the black Israelites, who are extremely dangerous. In Miami, they killed a couple of their followers for just wanting to leave. Just cut their heads off, decapitated them. A few of their followers, in fact. All of those organizations have been completely infiltrated by communists. I would go as far as to say that they are now manipulated and ran by international communism. And it only makes sense because if, let's say, they want a situation created where the police have to come on the scene, where the police have to intervene, and maybe where there are people who are hurt, then a riot is provoked. Frankly, it's very simple. Get a Ku Klux Klansman, have him burn a cross in a black person's lawn, or get one of the Ku Klux Klanman's cops, or whatever, and get them to commit any atrocity against a black, and naturally the black people, who have also their provocateur, the Russian provocateur here, begins to scream, "Kill Whitey! Burn, baby, burn!" And the next thing is there's a riot, which naturally brings repression, which naturally brings beatings and all of that type of situation, and brings causes people naturally to feel that the system is oppressive, that the system is trying to destroy them, especially in the black community, because of the fact that we were slaves, the fact that there have been atrocities committed, and those things have to be very clear that they are true. And those things that have happened, many times have happened in the past because of ignorance, because of racial hatreds, but now they're being utilized by the communists to completely destroy the black community, to completely divide the black community and not allow them to even have the opportunity of coming close to the other ethnic groups and trying to find out and work out our problems together, you see.
Well, that suggests a problem perhaps in the black leadership. What is your opinion of that?
Definitely. Well, the black leadership that I've seen since I returned, I've seen to be very liberal. Some, without a doubt, communist. Very well prepared. And they play their roles very, very well. And that goes back to as far as the great savior, Martin Luther King, who I, myself as an individual, I never liked during the time that he was active. I didn't like him because of the fact that he was a pacifist.
And you wanted more action.
I wanted terror. At that time, I said, you want to see change? Put a .38 to a man's head and pull the trigger. You've got change. My ideology at that time was based on, as Mao Zedong said, political power comes from the barrel of a gun, and that was all I could understand. So I didn't like Martin Luther King at that time because I saw him as someone just leading our people out there to be beaten and stabbed and kicked in the tail. Later, after I discovered, I began to understand the workings of international communism, understood how those situations are provoked and how his leadership provoked situations that created intervention by police, governmental intervention on the national level, then I understood that he also was working directly with the communists, you see. I don't know if he was a card-carrying communist. I do know that the people that worked with him and around him were communist. And I have to use the old adage now, birds of a feather flock together. I won't work with a communist. So this man, who was very intelligent, much more so than I, and he was well aware of the people who worked with him, he was warned several times of certain people who were communist in his organization, and yet he continued. So I would say that definitely he was well aware of who he was working with, and it didn't matter. I would classify him, if I'm correct in my assumptions and my assertions, I would classify him as a traitor, just as I classify Angela Davis as a traitor. And because that woman, talking about her particularly, she's been to Cuba. She's seen the situation there. She knows what it's about. She's been to Russia. She knows of the racism that exists in Russia. She knows that black people in Russia can't move freely, nor can they live where they want to live, nor can they marry if they so desire a white Russian woman. If they do, they are taken out of the country. They cannot return, and she has to go with them. She knows that just as I know it, and yet she says nothing about that. In fact, she won't even discuss the problem of racism in Russia, the racism against the Mongolians, the racism against what's the other group I'm trying to think of,
the Jews?
Definitely the Jews. Definitely.
Ethnic discrimination.
Definitely. And she never discusses that.
You mentioned a moment ago that you thought these people were in essence traitors.
Yes.
Traitors to what?
To humanity. I believe that they're traitors to humanity. That's why I classify them as diabolical. I believe that they have sold their souls, everything to Satan. They are just, they're diabolical. They definitely are. They've betrayed humanity. And knowingly, some because they enjoy the power, some because they enjoy the blood, that they have a lust for blood, they have a lust for that absolute power, and that's why they do that. They've sold out. They're traitors, definitely. Yes.
Well, Mr. Bryan, we've covered a lot of material here. This has been extremely enlightening and kind of frightening.
Yes, very.
Looking ahead, what do you see in the future for America?
I've said when I first returned that we're going to see more terrorist activities in the next few years than we probably ever have, because of the fact that we have been prepared, the American public has been prepared for that through the media, through propaganda, and through laxity, just being too lax and not really interested in what's happening around us, through the infiltration and use of narcotics and dope that is brought into our communities that has completely destroyed the morals. I see a very, 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 very turbulent future, but I do see victory because I see God. As long as there is God, and there will always be, I see victory. And that's the only thing I can say to the American people, to everyone, is everything else might, anything might happen. But one thing, just keep saying, God exists. Communism is a lie.
And with that being said, we only have a few minutes left of the show tonight. If you would like to call in and speak on what you've heard, or call in about what you heard at the beginning of the show about these four individuals kidnapping and torturing this autistic man. And no, these are not what you would consider teenagers. They're 18 to 24 years old. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were laughing and partying it up. And they recorded it live stream to the world. Had it not been for social media, the antique mainstream media would not even be addressing it right now. And they are mad that, or some individuals, I should say, are mad that social media pushed it so hard to make sure that the message got out. That this is not acceptable, and it's not acceptable for anybody. I don't care what color your skin is. Nobody. Call in at 1-800-313-9443. 1-800-313-9443. Eric, what do you think about that amazing testimony and interview of Tony Bryant?
Fascinating interview. I really enjoyed it. Yep. Great job.
And, you know, I don't think enough people hear from individuals and testimonies, factual testimonies from individuals who used to be in the movement and are no longer in the movement. And they're not in the movement, not because they were pulled out for a different reason. It's because they woke up to the reality of what communism really is. And I implore our listeners, look up the Communist Manifesto. Look up the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. Almost every bit of that has been implemented already within the United States of America. And we're trying to stop that because we care about you, because your life matters. Your life matters. And we don't care what color your skin is. But I do care that antique mainstream media is trying to make this as if it is, oh, well, you know, it was just a mistake. It was something stupid. No, it was horrid. You wouldn't treat a dog that way. It's not acceptable. If that had been the reverse of four white people doing that to an autistic black man, there would be places burning down right now. I have a caller. Fred, how are you doing this evening, dear?
Okay. I'm only going to short blast, and then I want to get off because I have some things to, I have to think things over. When did this Bryant die? What year?
1999.
99. That's 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty up on things.
Yes, he was.
I mean, he's a pretty articulate guy.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds reasonably intelligent.
Yeah, a lot of the original Black Panthers actually were. The original Black Panthers at the very, very, very beginning of them were not, didn't get together for the communist agenda. And what happened is they got infiltrated by the communists and also, you know.
They all get infiltrated.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't give a make a damn whether it's communism, socialism, or fascism. Mm-hmm. It's still a tyranny. Actually, we are fascist. The United States is a fascist state. And, you know, they bring up communism and socialism. And this is spread into it. But this is a fascist state. But anyhow,
it actually runs into communitarianism.
Well, I know that. The Axe Maker. Listen to that show if you ever have a chance again.
Mm-hmm.
By Lark, you know. I called in. It took 3 days to get that show out, and I called in. But anyhow, something don't jive. Anyhow, have a good evening. I'll get off the phone and meet somebody else can get in there. Bye, and thank you. Have a good evening. Bye.
All right. You have a great evening. Thank you for calling in, Fred. We love it when you call in. And you know, no matter which name you try to put on this, it's tyranny. Whether it's here inside the United States of America or it's somewhere else, it's the oppression of humanity. And I think a lot of times we make a mistake, and I do this too, we make a mistake of putting a specific word to it. And all of them, you have so much that it can be attributed to, but the reality, the deepest reality is it's anti-humanity. Would you agree with that statement, Eric?
Yes, absolutely, Lori.
Because, you know, no matter which way you wrap treason and tyranny and abuse of the people, it is still tyranny and treason and abuse of the people. And no matter which way you wrap it, it's unacceptable. Because whether you realize it or not, you're chosen by God. You may not even know it yet. And I do want to address one thing that I heard the other night. There was a listener. I do not remember his name. I was not on the show. I just heard it on the show. However, he made the comment that Lucifer was Jesus Christ, and that is not accurate. It was a lowercase God that he was talking about. So please, if you're listening, research in your 1611 Bible. Been there, done that, read it. And it is not ever, ever stating that Jesus Christ is Satan or Lucifer. And with that, we are done with the show for this evening. Please join us again tomorrow night on Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio broadcast on RBN. Thank you. God bless you for joining us. And as always, watch your backs and check your facts. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Hi, folks. In a world of GMO, genetically modified organisms, that is, chemicals, processed foods, and a healthcare system that's unraveling like a cheap suit, it's time to prepare. God created herbs, and herbs help man. Our body can heal itself, just sometimes we need assistance. You need some help? GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Our mild detox is quite powerful with its unique blend of 8 different herbs. And if you're looking for more, our non-GMO supplements will help you with different needs you might have. Health should be a top priority. Take care of your health naturally. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Give your body a treat. Let the herbs do their thing naturally. Read all the testimonies on the website, GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Sickness and viruses are like intruders, and herbs are like warriors. Let the tea work for you. That's GetTheTea.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Sin.